All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, June 17th, 2015. And this says, before the first cup of jewels here on UCY.TV, it is partly sunny and 67 degrees here in upstate New York. And at least we're not getting the sogginess that they're getting down in Texas. It's actually pretty nice here and we're starting to dry out a little bit. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Chinese Chicken and Cream Cheese Crickets. And we looked at all kinds of crazy things yesterday. One of the things was how they had voted in the House to get rid of country of origin labels on meats. And we kind of looked at that over the last couple days. And then we dug up some really disturbing stuff yesterday in regards to the Monsanto Protection Act 2.0 called the Dark Act that I believe they are voting on tomorrow. We looked at the Nasal Ranger. Nasal Ranger. And how talked about how they should be using it for the sniff test that the FDA apparently uses on all of our food. As part of its inspection, we also looked at how we don't have anywhere near the correct amount of inspectors to be inspecting our food. And in the end, it came to the fact that, yes, nobody is keeping us safe. And that seems to be the theme that we've been following for the last month or so. So I think we're going to continue on from there today. I want to take a look at a few of the things that came out yesterday. Here, one of the things, so we're going to look at some food. And I'm sorry, guys. Thank you, by the way. I don't know what's going on with my mic, but it looks like it's on now. But I'm going to have to close chat because it's distracting. One of the things we're going to look at today, I caught a story right after the show yesterday that was out of Dr. Mercola's publication on Mercola.com. 2015, now here we find they're making all kinds of changes, of course, to laws in regards to food. Like I said, we're going to find out that labeling is going to remain voluntary for labeling GMOs. We're also going to find out that we won't know whether or not our chicken comes from China, Mexico, or Canada. Right. We were reading about the World Trade Organization having, not lawsuits, but I don't know what they're called, where they went to the World Trade Organization, Canada and Mexico did, and they're trying to force the United States to take the country of origin labels off of the meats because it causes quote unquote unfair competition. We also saw that Japan was doing the same thing to South Korea over the radioactive seafood. So there's all these laws that are changing. I saw, like I said, Dr. Mercola, 2015 Dietary Guidelines for Americans make stride toward better nutrition, but fallacies remain. You know, well, let's read a little bit of this. Every 5 years, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, so that good old USDA that's keeping us safe, wink, wink, and the Health and Human Services convene a 15-member panel to update the nation's dietary guidelines. The panel stated, mission is to identify foods and beverages that can help you achieve and maintain a healthy weight, promote health, and prevent disease. These guidelines also serve as the foundation for national nutrition policies such as, yes, the school lunch programs, which we found out that the Chinese chicken is probably shipping to your kids' school right now, and feeding programs for the elderly. The 2015 Dietary Guidelines includes a number of positive modifications, although I still, and this is Dr. Mercola, do not agree with all of its recommendations. Public comments on the report were only accepted through April 8th of 2015. One of the things that we've seen in our research is that there's been this mass increase in dementia and things such as Alzheimer's disease. And of course, there's, you know, 32 reasons why they think you could be getting Alzheimer's, from aluminum to taking Benadryl, right? We read about that story. But one of the other things that they're thinking is that since the 70s, when they started with this whole low-fat push and being healthy and cutting all the fat out of your diet and eating all these, you know, margarines and whatever, all the crap my mother used to buy when I was a kid and try and tell me it was good for me. And I always said, oh, it tastes horrible, Mom. One of the things that they're thinking now is that cholesterol, since our brain is a big fatty mass, the cholesterol actually is very good for our brain, and that potentially by going all low fat for the last 30 or 40 years, we could have actually caused this epidemic of dementia and diseases such as Alzheimer's, because we've deprived our brains of the fats it needed to operate properly. Well, listen to this. Cholesterol limit removed from the 2015 dietary guidelines. So anyone who's gotten the evil eye from their doctor at one point in the past, listen up. On the upside, the advisory panel has decided to eliminate warnings about dietary cholesterol, which for decades has been wrongfully blamed for causing heart disease. Yes. You know, there, I had read a whole bunch of stories that are like, no, guess what? Cholesterol does not cause heart disease. And as a matter of fact, that other recommendation about taking, calcium to help build your bones, they were finding that all that extra calcium people were taking, you know, on dietary recommendations was actually ending up in our arteries and calcifying them. So be careful and don't believe everything you read. Do your research. It says the latest guideline accurately states that there is no such link between cholesterol and heart disease. According to the report, quote, cholesterol is not a nutrient of concern for overconsumption, unquote. Until now, guidelines have recommended limiting dietary cholesterol to 300 milligrams a day, which amounts to about 2 eggs, and as noted by Stephen Neeson, chairman of the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine at the Cleveland Clinic, quote, most of us have for a long time believed the dietary guidelines pointed in the wrong direction. It is long overdue, unquote. And I've always asked that, like, our grandparents and our great grandparents all ate eggs just about every day when they had their farms and whatever. Everybody ate eggs and nobody dropped dead necessarily. I mean, maybe they did and they didn't know what it was from, but I will tell you, eggs are great brain food, and that is one of my cure-alls when I am not feeling well. An egg boosts me right up. All right, I'm going to continue this. Saturated fat remains a myth. Unfortunately, while high cholesterol foods like eggs are off the hook, they still insist that saturated fat causes high cholesterol in your blood and thereby promote heart disease. The panel recommends limiting both trans fats, which are indeed harmful, and yes, I will agree there, and saturated fat, which is not harmful, to less than 10% of daily calories. This is still way off base. So while there's cause for celebration that eggs have been vindicated, of course, yes, eggs have been vindicated right as we go into a mass shortage and we're talking about importing them from other countries and potentially not knowing where they came from. Make sure you eat your foreign eggs. There is still work to be done to correct people's fear of saturated fat. Saturated fats are actually important for optimal health, and most people likely need anywhere from 50 to 80% of their daily calories from healthy fat, far more than the upper limit of 10% suggested by federal guidelines. For weight loss, they also recommend sticking to low and non-fat dairy, which I believe is also a mistake, and that's Dr. Mercola. Low-fat recommendations are likely to do more harm than good across the board, but it may be particularly counterproductive if you are trying to lose weight. In fact, there is mounting evidence that clearly shows that a high-fat, low-carb diet can be exceptionally effective for weight loss. And wasn't there that program, I don't remember what that was called, where people would like eat bacon and burgers all day long and cut all the carbohydrates out of their diet, and they were losing amazing amounts of weight. I don't remember what that weight loss plan was called, but yeah, so there's a lot of evidence about that now. So saturated fats are not only essential for proper cellular and hormonal function, but they also provide a concentrated source of energy in your diet. The high fat, low carb combination is therefore ideal when you cut down on carbs. You generally need to replace that lost energy by increasing your fat consumption. And yes, when you eat too many carbs, you end up with blood sugar problems as well. So pay attention to that. I mean, a big juicy steak. There's nothing better. Sources of healthy fats that you want to add to your diet include olives and olive oil for cold dishes. Yum, I love olives and olive oil. Coconuts and coconut oil for all types of cooking and baking. Yes, coconut oil is actually way better because the oils don't break down at high temperatures like they do for olive oil. Butter made from raw grass-fed organic milk. Avocados. Organic pasteurized egg yolks, raw nuts such as macadamias and pecans, grass-fed meats, palm oil, and unheated organic nut oils. Another healthy fat is the omega-3 DHA, and that is approximately 60% of your brain is composed of fats. And I just totally lost where I was because I looked at chat. 25% of which is DHA. Omega-3 fats such as DHA are considered essential because the body cannot produce it and you must get it from your daily diet. So Dr. Mercola recommends taking an animal-based omega-3 fat such as krill oil on a regular basis while simultaneously limiting damaged omega-6 fats found in abundance in vegetable oils and processed foods. Well, I didn't ever know about krill oil. I used to take cod liver oil, but then I got a little nervous over the contamination in fish, so I started taking flaxseed oil, but he doesn't mention that at all. Trans fat and sugar are the dietary culprits that cause heart disease. To learn more about flawed science that led us to this far afield, I highly recommend taking time to watch Dr. Marianne DeMacy's report on the saturated fat myth, which aired on ABC News in Australia about 2 years ago. Dr. Fred Kamirow, author of Cholesterol is Not the Culprit, has also detailed exactly where we went off track. Dr. Kamirow, nearly 100 years old, was the first researcher to identify trans fat as the real culprit behind clogged arteries way back in 1957. His research has also demonstrated that neither dietary cholesterol nor saturated fat promoted arterial plaque and are being wrongfully shunned, as initially postulated by Dr. Yudkin in the 1960s. Sugar is another major dietary culprit in the development of heart disease. Gee, who would have thunk it as we have children's cereals all over the United States loaded with sugar, and we get them started early, processed foods and sugar for our kids. Hey, isn't that in the... It's not even a dietary pyramid anymore. What did Michelle Obama make it? A dietary pizza? His research also demonstrated that, to break it down in simple terms, to protect your heart health, you need to address your insulin and leptin resistance. And I think leptin is what makes your arteries elastic, right? Versus being unelastic. Which is the result of eating a diet too high in sugars and grains. To safely and effectively reverse insulin and leptin resistance, thereby lowering your heart disease risk, you need to, 1, avoid processed foods and other sources of refined sugar and processed fructose, like high fructose corn syrup, as well as refined grains, because those are carbohydrates which turn into sugars. Whole grains are also best avoided if you are insulin and leptin resistant. And 2, focus your diet on whole foods, ideally organic, if you can afford them, and replace your grain carbs with large amounts of vegetables, low to moderate amounts of high quality protein, think organically raised pasture animals, and 3, as much high quality healthy fats as you want, saturated and monounsaturated, from animal and tropical oil sources. Other notable changes in the 2015 dietary guidelines, despite continuing the saturated fat myth for another 5 years, overall, the 2015 guidelines are probably better than we've seen in decades. Among the most notable changes is a partial turnaround on artificial sweeteners. Really? While they say artificial sweeteners such as aspartame are probably okay in moderation with not, they should not be promoted for weight loss. And I just saw a story yesterday, and I did not share it anywhere, that they're now finding artificial sweeteners in our drinking water. So it's getting into the water supply as well. In 2015, the guidelines also reflect a shift away from focusing on specific nutrients such as fat, carbs, or protein, which in the past has led to an ever-growing plethora of processed functional foods, toward a general focus on eating more whole foods. My only objection is that they still do not consider the hazards of eating too many whole grains, which can exacerbate insulin and leptin resistance. That said, the panel does recommend limiting refined grains like white bread and stuff, I would assume, and white sugar. As for the panel's review of research into foods that help combat disease, vegetables and fruits are the only dietary elements found to be consistently helpful against every disease included in the review. One can only hope that this will sink in and eventually lead to much needed changes in agricultural subsidies, which are currently geared entirely toward the manufacturing of disease promoting processed foods that are high in added sugars. And I'm going to add something here. Also, the industry, and we'll look at a story that I found yesterday after the show, an industry that is focusing its efforts on growing GMO crops versus organic crops. And let's pop over there right now. You know, while we were looking at hiding GMO labeling and this new Monsanto Protection Act 2.0 and the so-called Dark Act and removing country of origin labels from things in preparation for all these international trade agreements, check this out. The U.S. is forced to import corn as shoppers demand organic food. I talked yesterday about trying to find any type of organic corn product, and it's very difficult. Anything that's non-GMO, and even if it says that it's non-GMO, I came across some corn chips, which we hadn't eaten in many years because of the BT corn. I found that these corn chips that said that they were non-GMO actually were not, and I don't remember the name, but it was like some Mexican name in a brown paper bag with orange lettering. But there are products out there. But listen to this. A growing demand for organics and the near total reliance by U.S. farmers on genetically modified corn and soybeans is driving a surge in imports from other nations where crops largely are free of bioengineering. Imports such as corn from Romania and soybeans from India are booming, according to the an analysis of the U.S. trade data released this past Wednesday by the Organic Trade Association and Pennsylvania State University. That shows a potential market for U.S. growers willing to avoid the use of artificial chemicals and genetically modified seeds, says Laura Batchta, chief executive officer of the association, which includes Whole Foods, White Wave Foods, and Earthbound Farms. The report is a, quote, help wanted sign for U.S. farmers, Batchta said. There are market distortions that are pretty striking. Most of the corn and soybean shipments become feed for chicken and cows so they can be certified as organic under the U.S. Department of Agriculture guidelines. My friend and I were just talking about that yesterday. You know, one of the things that we don't realize is that a lot of this GMO corn that's being produced, not only is it going into high fructose corn syrup that's in just about all of our processed foods out there, but it's also being used to feed the animals. So even if, you know, you get a piece of beef that says that they're not using growth hormone or antibiotics anymore, there's a really good chance that that cow probably ate genetically modified feed. All right, back to the story. Organic poultry and dairy operators shun feed made with seeds from Monsanto and other domestic suppliers in favor of foreign products, even as the U.S. remains the world's top grower of corn and soybeans As a result, imports to the U.S. of Romanian corn rose to $11.6 million in 2014 from only $545,000 the year before. So I guess any of that organic corn we're eating, most of it's probably from Romania. I don't know. How close is Romania to Chernobyl, I wonder? Soybean imports from India. Yeah, another place that you really want to eat your food from. Oh, my God. Has more than doubled to $73.8 million. Sales of food certified by the U.S. as free of synthetic chemicals or genetic engineering reached $35.9 billion in 2014, an 11% increase over 2013, and about a 5.1% of the U.S. grocery spending bill. So I'm going to give some applause there, because an 11% increase from 2013 to 2014 tells me that we, the alternative media, raising the alarm about GMO foods, the March Against Monsanto, our very own Mr. Nick Barnaby, who was one of the founders of the Global March Against Monsanto, has had some effect. That's amazing. It's now grown to $35.9 billion of imports in 2014. That's just amazing. Rising, but that's bad for our economy. We should be growing that at home. That's going to completely add to the trade deficit. Rising consumer demand and what has been a niche market is creating shortages, pushing companies that supply farms needing organic feed to seek out foreign sources. And that frightens me. I mean, we talked about that yesterday, shipping in all this food that really isn't being inspected very much at all. And if it is, we looked at the ports coming in around LA yesterday and what the FDA was doing, and much of it is smell test. You know, they put some of it under a microscope, but they're only inspecting one, what did they say for 2015? It was going to be like 1.53% of all imports, and they're putting a lot of the onus on the country that is importing the food to make sure that it's safe. It says about 90% of U.S. corn and soy is bioengineered, thus automatically ineligible for the organic label. Just north of the Minnesota-Iowa border on a dirt road closed to heavy truck traffic by late spring because of the mud, Highview Feeds has seen its sales quadruple since winning organic certification a decade ago. Unlike nearby conventional feed stores that buys mostly from suppliers within a half-hour drive, Highview gets some from Canada, more than 500 miles from its Mabel headquarters, to make up for domestic shortages. Quote, it is a market that not everyone is going to get into because it's done on a different scale, says Kit Vandermark, owner and founder of Highview, which categorizes its feeds as conventional, organic, and non-GMO, like old-school food, right? So we end up with buyers and sellers from a much broader area. The USDA only began collecting data on organic crops in 2011. Most of what is tracked is fresh produce and major grains. Processed foods and meats, for example, aren't reported in any organic category. Are there really organic processed foods? I mean, I know there's like nitrate-free bacon in that, but I'm sure that the animal was probably still fed GMO crap. The 4 years of records show a rapidly growing trade relationship. In 2014, U.S. organic exports were $553 million, almost quadruple the 2011 total. Imports last year were $1.28 billion, led by $332.5 million of organic coffee. Imports of two crops, corn and soybeans, are also leading the U.S. export underscore gap in the market, says Miles McEnvoy, deputy administrator of the USDA's National Organic Program. Soybeans are the second biggest U.S. organic import with $184 million shipped last year. India is the number one source, followed by China. So I don't know about you, but two of the countries, and I think I even mentioned this yesterday, that I probably wouldn't knowingly eat food from ever would be India and China. They're probably two of the most polluted countries in the whole world. For corn, and overall sales of 35.7 million in 2014, Romania is the biggest seller to the U.S., followed by Turkey, then the Netherlands, and then Canada. You know, maybe if some of those farmers that are growing corn for the ethanol project to put into our gasoline turn themselves into organic corn farms, they'd make a hell of a lot more money. Says the totals are tiny compared with the combined $92.7 billion value of the two crops last year, and that means that the domestic market could easily meet organic needs. In reality, U.S. farming is not structured to meet some of the highest dollar consumer needs, you think? There just hasn't been enough development of the organic feed supply in the U.S., he said. Organic food certifiers are in short supply in some regions. Tell you what, if anyone's looking for something to go into for a business, looks like organic farming is like a cash cow. And you could eat it too for yourself. A requirement that all organic farms be free of non-organic seed and chemicals for 3 years means farmers give up profits before gaining any price benefits. Recent high prices that fed record farm profits also gave growers less reason to switch. All right, last section, organic prices. If there were a market incentive for more people to produce organic corn, there would be more of it, says Paul Bertels, vice president of the production and utilization with the National Corn Growers Association in St. Louis. Even though organic corn is selling for about $12.50 a bushel, more than triple the cash price for regular corn. So, I mean, how crazy is this, too? We're going to be forced to eat the poison because we're not going to be able to afford the old school food. It's just insane to me. Lower yields in a 3-year transition period makes GMO and synthetic-free grain not worth the risk, he said. And, you know, when I drive down in the southern tier of New York, you see lots and lots and lots and lots of cornfields, and every single one of them has a little placard sitting next to the road saying whose version and what, you know, rendition of GMO corn it is. It's all over New York State. Says in some cases, nations where farming is less industrial are seizing this advantage. Genetically modified seeds are largely absent from Romania and Ukraine. Yes, and guess what? Ukraine is where Chernobyl is. So I'm sure that any non-GMO corn's probably loaded. Oh my God, I think I need to take my rad meter over those non-GMO chips I found. Anyway, genetically modified seeds are largely absent from Romania and Ukraine. Only their glow-in-the-dark seeds are. Putting their farmers closer to organic certification for sales in the U.S. So I'm sure that they don't test for radiation for organic certification. Still, as commodity prices tumble and growers seek higher profit margins, U.S. farmers may seek out more organic acreage. With the markets at break-even prices for many farmers, we are seeing more interest in organic land. And I am not predicting a tidal wave, but I am seeing twice as much interest in this as we have in the past. And we all should. We absolutely all should. I mean, the fact that they want to get rid of all the labeling so you don't know where it's from or what you're eating, and they think it's going to be an unfair advantage for organic food manufacturers to see the GMO labels on foods should tell you something. They don't want you to know. All right. Here we're going to go to a clippy now. I caught this morning. you know, we're looking too at raising food prices and all these food shortages, the chicken culling 46 or 48 million birds now dead because of this never before seen worst outbreak in the United States. Now we're having egg shortages. We have the droughts in California. So nobody's planting food. And oh my God, look out, because the prices of everything, non-GMO and GMO, are going sky high. Food shortages everywhere. But what? Why does half of America's food go to waste? Well, check this out.
We launch an occasional series we are calling Food, Glorious Food. Reports about what we eat, how our food is grown, and the economics of putting a meal on the table. Tonight we begin with food waste. Much of what is grown on American farms never gets to market. Allison Aubrey of National Public Radio has our report. The story is part of the NewsHour's ongoing collaboration with NPR.
In Salinas Valley, California, it's a symphony of sound as the growing season gets underway. This fertile strip produces 70% of our leafy greens. It's been dubbed the Salad Bowl of America. But not everything grown here makes it to our plates. In fact, some of it never leaves Salinas. At the local solid waste dump, operations manager Cesar Zanuga watches as trucks roll in every day to dump produce destined for a nearby landfill.
Like, if you saw this video, you would not believe there are entire garbage trucks full of fresh vegetables, and they just lift up the lift truck, and they're just dumping it into the landfill.
We got a whole load, pretty much, of loose organic lettuce. You know, we've got spinach towards the back. Looks like it's perfectly fine. Nothing wrong with it. We got some kale here. We got broccoli in the back as well. Yeah, plenty of produce to make a salad here.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks delicious. It's all beautiful, bright green romaine lettuce and broccoli and spinach. It looks amazing. It's actually making me hungry. And it's all laying in a landfill with garbage bags next to it and all kinds of other garbage. It's just unbelievable.
The greens in this landfill are from local farms, and sometimes they end up here because something goes wrong during the packaging process. Another reason perfectly good food gets wasted, Peter Lehner from the Natural Resources Defense Council explains.
Here's a question. Why would they not? Okay, something goes wrong in the packaging process, so the label's sideways. Why would they not hand that out to employees? Leave it in the back room and say, hey, take as much as you want, because at the end of the day, it's going to the landfill. I mean, this is just insane. Why would you throw all this food away?
Right now, food that isn't sold to your best buyer is often dumped in the landfill. The prices for fresh fruits and vegetables can go up and down quite a bit, and farmers may plant thinking they'll get one price, but by the time harvest comes around, there's another price, and it's not even worth it for them to get to the market.
A report by the Natural Resources Defense Council says that as much as 40% of all the food produced in the United States never gets eaten.
What? 40%? 40% as prices are going through the roof at the grocery store, and we can't afford to eat organic, so we have to eat the poison food, and 40% of our food that's grown is dumped?
The idea that almost half of our food is wasted is crazy.
That waste occurs at every point along the food chain. Some is lost in transport and during food processing. Supermarkets and we, the consumers, end up tossing out a lot, too. But what about what's lost on the farm? An NRDC report found that anywhere from 1 to 30% of farmers' crops don't make it to market. We toured Ocean Mist Farms with Art Barrientos to find out why.
This cauliflower here, you see how it's just has that yellow tinge to it?
Mm-hmm.
This is not marketable.
Just because it's the color's a bit off.
Because it's yellow. This will not...
What? I'm looking at this cauliflower. Yeah, it's got a little tiny yellow tinge to it. I'd eat that all day.
I'll be packed.
It's got to be every bit as nutritious as the white cauliflower down here in the field. I mean, what's wrong with it?
There isn't anything wrong with it. Let me cut a... grab that...
okay, yep. It's crunchy. It's tasty. It tastes like any cauliflower I've ever had. So are we just shopping with our eyeballs and forgetting all about our taste buds?
Absolutely. As consumers, we want white cauliflower. That's what we expect from our grocer. As a result, it gets incorporated back into the ground. We won't harvest it.
So what's another issue that might ding something out of the marketplace?
Size. Size is critical. Well, this cauliflower here is just too big.
So you have to meet these very specific size stipulations.
Yes.
What? It's too big? Holy shit. You know, and they're talking about this farm here in particular is in California. So we have this mega drought going on, and they are using water in this drought-stricken state to grow all this food where 40% they're then throwing away because it's too big or it's not completely white. Give me a break.
And this is too big.
It's really
too big. I would love a massive cauliflower. You know, and if they sold it by the pound, what difference does it make if it's too big? You know, buy a big one if you want more, buy a little one if you want less. This is just absolutely ridiculous.
Kind of shocking to me.
Well, it can be.
Size matters because retailers demand uniformity. When everything is stacked up nicely, it makes for better eye candy. Like this perfectly sized cauliflower that is being wrapped up, destined for the produce aisle. The yellow rejects and heads deemed too big or too small are left behind in the field to be plowed under. And if you think broccoli and cauliflower have a tough time making the grade, check out these peaches.
If you look at this piece of fruit all the way around, there's no blemishes to it. It's got red color with a yellow blush background. That's going to go to our premium box, the high-end retail. And this one here has got green on it, so this would definitely go into number two. We wouldn't put this in a premium box.
Wait, back that up. Premium grade, seconds? Wouldn't you buy those seconds? And the ones that don't even rate as a one or two? Dumped into this truck.
Oh my God, it's an entire garbage truck full of peaches.
Here is our final throwing out, going to the cattle feed.
Well, at least they're feeding it to the cattle.
So think of everything it takes to grow these crops. The water, the fertilizer, the fuel to run the tractor. But ultimately, if these crops don't measure up to standards, they're just plowed under here in the field, and all that energy is wasted.
This is just unbelievable. So here, you know, we're crying about food shortages. People don't have enough to eat. We, you know, don't have enough water. And oh my God, we don't have, you know, enough feed to feed the animals. So we're culling all these cows last year in California. And half of everything that they're producing, they're throwing away before it ever makes it to market.
10% of our water, 10% of our energy, 40% of our land is used to grow our food.
And when it ends up in a landfill, Lehner says, there's another problem.
Now, food is the largest material in our landfills. Of all the things that are in our dumps, the biggest portion is food.
The biggest portion of what's in our landfills is food.
When it rots in a landfill, it emits methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas, 30 or 100 times more potent than carbon dioxide.
But there are some solutions on the horizon. Ocean Mist and HMC Farms donate some of their less than perfect produce to the California food banks. Last year, Ocean Mist sent nearly 400,000 pounds of broccoli and cauliflower, and some of it ends up here at this warehouse in San Francisco. It can store 7 square miles of produce. Paul Ash oversees the operation. He says in the last decade, the California Association of Food Banks has doubled the amount of produce it distributes.
So, I mean, at least that's good. They started shipping it to food banks. I don't know why they didn't start this long ago. And this is just at one farm in California. Let's duplicate this across the entire country. This is just insane to me. I mean, food is going to be priced out of our price range pretty soon. The last time, you know, I went to the grocery store, you spend $50 when you go for a 6-pack of toilet paper every single time and a head of lettuce, you know? This is just unbelievable to me.
This year, we hope to grow the California Farm to Family program by over 70 million pounds. And part of that will mean more produce for California food banks. But we hope part of it also means that we're going to be able to push this eastward to other food banks.
the food.
And here's the thing. So we're giving it to the food banks. But, I mean, wouldn't consumers buy less than perfect food? I know I would. I mean, there was nothing wrong with that cauliflower in any way, shape, or form. Whoops, it's too big. There was nothing wrong with those peaches.
Banks Farm to Family program has tried to recruit more growers who pack in the field to do what Ocean Mist does. They separate out the seconds and pack it in these black crates headed for the food bank. The premium heads get packed in the Ocean Mist boxes headed for retailers. It's a simple process, but only 3 out of 25 broccoli and cauliflower growers in the state participate.
Only three out of 25. That's just unreal. You know, and here's the other thing. A lot of the stuff that they were dumping at the beginning of this was from an organic farm. They were dumping organic greens into a landfill. I most certainly would love to see a $2 organic tomato versus a $5 organic tomato, even if it's got a little bit of yellow on it.
Harold McClarty of HMC Farms says he'd like to donate more of his peaches to the food banks, but
getting it into the hands of somebody to eat it isn't free. There's got to be an economic incentive to move more of this into an avenue that food banks could take advantage of. It's a lot easier and cheaper just to basically throw it away.
Isn't that the American way, the disposable society? It's cheaper to just throw it away.
The state of California does offer farmers tax credits to donate produce, but Ash says the food banks are lobbying for bigger deductions. There are only 6 other states besides California that give tax breaks to growers for donating food.
50 million Americans don't know where the next meal is coming from. We, meanwhile, are wasting all this food. If we cut our food waste even by a third, there would be enough food for all those people who don't know where the next meal is coming from to be fully fed.
There'd be enough food for 50 million people who don't know where their next meal is coming from if we just cut our waste by one third.
As food banks work to expand their programs, some entrepreneurs say there are so many seconds to go around, they see a whole new business model, much like what a French supermarket did last year.
So we launched Les Fruits et Légumes Moches, starring the grotesque apple, the ridiculous potato.
And it worked.
Our new kind of fruits and vegetables were an immediate success. We faced only one problem, being sold out.
Yeah, I read about that. France actually banned throwing away food, so they've been selling all the rejects. And yeah, the problem they ran into is that they sold them all out.
Here in the U.S., entrepreneur Ben Simon and 2 partners are betting they can turn Americans onto less than perfect produce.
We're working hard right now to launch a new venture called Imperfect.
You get a box of seasonal, ugly produce delivered to your door every week. And because this produce looks a little funky on the outside, you get it for 30 to 50% less.
Imperfect plans to start delivery in the San Francisco area sometime this summer.
That's awesome. They're going to deliver it to your door for 30 to 50% less of imperfect vegetables. Anyone who ever grew up with a vegetable garden knows that you always get the freak tomato or potato or cucumber or the two-legged carrot, right? How many of those have you had?
Just signed a deal with a high-end grocery chain called Raley's, which has more than 100 stores in California and Nevada. Here's Raley's Megan Burritt.
When they're picking up that apple, we need to somehow tell them that story, whether it's, you know, these are the underdog apples, who doesn't love an underdog story, or something like that.
Will Americans embrace these misfits as easily as the Europeans have? Raley's is betting they will.
All right, go ahead and work it a little bit. And they're almost there, okay.
And back in Salinas, Cesar Zanuga is anticipating traffic will pick up as the growing season hits full swing. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm Allison Aubrey of NPR News in Salinas Valley.
That was a great clip. You know, one of the things that does concern me, again, getting back to radiation, is that as I'm looking at the end section of this video and they're showing the reject fruits at the grocery store, they have cherries that have like these second appendages, and they have potatoes with like these nodules all sticking out of them. And when Fukushima first happened, we had started looking at mutations in food and plants. And It, especially growing in California and being right at that Pacific coast where you're going to be getting the majority of the radiation from Fukushima, makes me wonder how many of those reject fruits and vegetables have been mutated to look like that by radiation. So who knows, but you know, I mean, throwing away 40% of all food that is produced in the United States just cannot happen. And I'm glad that there are some entrepreneurs out there that are going to find a way to get that into the hands of the people who need to eat. I mean, I would definitely eat a less than white piece of cauliflower. That's for certain if it was half price. All right. I am quickly running out of time here. This hour just whipped by. I want to read the story. I didn't catch it the other day. But I had it posted on my wall. We had talked about genetically modified insects. Oxitec in particular was the corporation out of the UK that was manufacturing these genetically modified mosquitoes that they wanted to release in the Keys. They had talked about it now a couple times, and there's been a huge uproar. And so from what I've seen, they have not done it yet. But wait till you hear this one. Good old Andrew Cuomo. Genetically modified moths released near New York cause outrage. These happen to be the very first genetically modified insects released into the wild that we know of in the United States. Yes, I feel so lucky to be in the state that did that with the governor that did that. It says environmental advocacy and organic farming organizations have sent a letter back last Thursday to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and Agriculture Commissioner Richard Ball, along with the Cornell University President David Scorton and Agricultural School Associate Dean Susan Brown, urging them to release information to the public about the field release of genetically engineered diamondback moths at the Cornell's Agricultural Experiment Station in Geneva, New York, and to stop any outdoor trials until more adequate information is available. In September of 2014, several of the organizations commented on the U.S. Department of Agriculture's environmental assessment for the proposed field release of Oxitec's GE Diamondback moths at Cornell University. The agency did not contact the organizations to address their myriad of concerns, and months later, the groups found out through a separate correspondence with the USDA that the genetically engineered moth permit had been quietly approved with no press release or other public notification. Quote, this release of genetically engineered otocidal moths is the very first of its kind in the United States, and it sets a very poor precedent that they were released with minimal environmental review and transparency, says Winona Hotzer, executive director of the Food and Water Watch. The USDA's irresponsible management of this genetically engineered insect is putting the environment and agriculture at risk, unquote. Proposals to release the GE moths in England, because that's where Oxitec is from, were halted in 2012, and concerns about the risk, and there were concerns about the risk assessment. Many issues that would be closely studied before the moths were released in Europe have not yet been considered in the U.S., says Helen Wallace, director of GeneWatch UK. Consumers and farmers deserve much better information about genetically engineered insects that could end up in the food chain. The USDA took comments on whether this first genetically engineered insect should be released for field trials, and then, without responding to our comments, approved the trials without public notice. The first use of genetically engineered insects in an agricultural setting should have required public consultations with potentially affected parties, as well as trials in physically enclosed spaces before even considering open field trials. Yes, they just let them out into the petri dish of the world without any proper studies, if you can believe this. says this violates one of the basic principles of biosafety for genetically engineered organisms, and they should be physically constrained in trials, not openly released. The mechanism for these GE moths to control population levels is for offspring to die in the larval stage. The larval moths will die on plants, including crops such as broccoli and cabbage. In its assessment, the USDA failed to recognize that if farms near the field trial sites happen to be certified organic or non-genetically engineered, their certification could be lost if these larval stage genetically engineered moths were present, because genetic engineering, even for pest control, is prohibited. And with no prior public information, accidental escapes and contamination would be a significant issue for proximate fields. So they just screwed all of the organic farms anywhere near that entire area in Geneva, because it's very possible they're going to end up with this genetically modified pupae on their broccoli or cabbage. The USDA has dropped the ball by approving this field trial without a thorough review and without notifying New York's organic farmers. I mean, guys, nobody is keeping us safe. How many times do I have to keep saying this? And the general public believes that all of these alphabet agencies are here to keep watch for us while we can sit and watch Dancing with the Stars. It's not happening. It's nincompoopedness from top to bottom. The loss of certification would be a major economic problem for these organic New York farmers, threatening future earnings from their crops and wiping out major investments of time and money to get the certification, said Ann Rufflin, executive director of the Northeastern Organic Farming Association of New York. If GE contamination occurs, it has the potential to not only permanently damage long-standing partnerships with organic buyers, but also destroy an organic farmer's livelihood and standing in the community. The maker of these moths, Oxitec, has a long track record of conducting genetically engineered insect field trials throughout the world without proper notification of the public, and now they have brought their model to the United States, says Lisa Archer, Friends of the Earth Food and Technology Program Director. The USDA and Cornell must put a stop to this activity and ensure that these insects have been thoroughly reviewed before they are released into the wild. So who would have thunk it? I was raising the alarm over Oxitec in the Keys with those genetically modified mosquitoes, but right in my very own backyard, these bastards jumped the gun, and they did it here without telling anybody that they did it. Good old Cuomo. I can't even get over how amazingly unbelievable the destruction of our biosphere has become. All right, and as if to add insult to injury, we talked about processed food and trans fats and GMO. Well, let this one be a lesson to you.
A fast food chain has taken a licking for its finger-licking good chicken shaped like a rat.
Very hard and rubbery.
California security guard Devorah Dixon says he bought a three-piece box of tenders at a KFC in L.A. On the Randy Economy radio show, he described taking a bite.
It was very nasty. I spit it out. I looked down at my hand and I realized that it was in the shape of a rat with a tail and everything in it.
Dixon posted photos on his Facebook page and he put the tender in the freezer. He says he returned to the restaurant with photos and his receipt.
The manager actually freaked out to confirm that it was a rat.
You guys will have to, I'll drop this in chat after the show, but it literally looks like a freaking squeaky rat covered in buttering and deep fried. It's like horrifying. He took a bite, man. I would be suing the shit out of KFC. That's what you get for eating fast food, dude.
She apologized for it. They actually just offered me a free meal.
Which he did.
They offered him a free meal. Isn't this like finding the finger in the Wendy's chili? Didn't that happen once? Oh, my God.
Climbed. He says he's lawyering up. This is what a chicken tender tends to look like. But shape alone is not enough to prove a chicken tender guilty of being a breaded rat. Jason says, our chicken tenders often vary in size and shape, and we currently have no evidence to support Dixon's claim.
Yeah, we just have the special shape. It's called the rat shape, and we serve it on Tuesdays.
Reminds us of the flap over a breaded chicken head that showed up amid some McDonald's wings. But in the case of the supposed rat, the unanswered question, what's lurking under the breading? We sure don't know, and Dixon isn't returning our messages.
So good.
KFC tells CNN, we have made various attempts to contact him, but he is refusing to either talk to us personally or through a lawyer. Nor has he come forth with a chicken piece in question for verification, which KFC offered to have done free of charge at an independent lab. Dixon claims that single bite affected his appetite.
Nauseous, woozy, I can't eat.
And I'm out of time. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It is Wednesday. We have Josh up live at 6 p.m. Eastern. The Continued Condition, the boys from New York with Jonathan and Steven at 8. 9 o'clock with Truth or Talk. April and Bernstein at 11. Get ready. Everyone have an awesome Wednesday. I'll catch up with you tomorrow.
For more news, visit pigmindnews.com.